kind of move, switch gears a little bit, move from Africa to Asia, and from human resources issues specifically to a kind of a broader approach to working with Ministry of Health. And we work basically through the Ministry of Health in our programs in Timor-Leste. Just a quick reminder, geographically, those of you who don't remember where Timor-Leste is, it was originally called East Timor, and it's just this little half island that's north of Australia, sort of at the edge of the Indonesian archipelago. And also a very brief look at the history of East Timor, because it really reflects a lot on what we do today. It was a colony of Portugal for over 400 years. And then when Portugal let go of their colonies, including East Timor, within a few months it was invaded, in an invasion that was considered illegal by everywhere, you know, all the other countries in the world with the exception of Australia, and occupied with this brutal occupation for 24 years. And you can't talk to anybody in East Timor who lived through that doesn't have some very terrible stories to tell about what they went through. Then when they were given a chance to vote for independence in 1999, very strong, overwhelming vote for independence, and in 2002 they became the world's newest nation, Timor-Leste. Changed the name at that point. But when the Indonesians left, they were a bit annoyed. They were annoyed that basically they had been rebuffed by this population that they'd actually had spent a lot of time and money on. And it's between 75 and 80% of the infrastructure. This is what the country looked like for a period of 3 weeks after the referendum was announced and they knew they had to leave. This really was pretty devastating. So basically any building that was within reach of a road, or almost any building within reach of a road, looked like that. But the country is a beautiful, you know, it's an island, so there's lots of rocky or else sandy beaches like this. It's quite a beautiful country. Throughout the middle of the island is a spine of mountains and a lot of pretty difficult to access areas, particularly during the rainy season. But, you know, it's not that the roads are bad, it's that there are no roads to a lot of these areas. A lot of traditions in East Timor. These are women that were gathered for. We realized early on that there were a lot of very deep-seated cultural traditions in this country, and that was going to affect our work in maternal and newborn care, which was the work that we were doing. So we had a lot of discussions with women to find out what their traditions were. And men, of course, had their own traditions. This guy in the middle is the chief of this community, and he's undergoing some kind of a ceremony that will keep out bad guys from the community. But very, very, very strong and very deep-seated traditions. So we were in East Timor at that time, back in 1999, before the referendum, rather briefly. And our first activity was to support a human rights delegation to look at violations of medical neutrality, of which there were many, and also to try to help women with maternal care in Dili, the capital. Our staff were basically deported when the violence began, but they returned as soon as possible afterward. And we have since then had as our mission to support this emerging Timorese health system. There had been no Timorese health system. It was either Portuguese, for whatever that was worth, or Indonesian, and there was quite a lot of effort in Indonesian times to try to build an infrastructure, but the leadership was all basically Indonesian. And then in 2004, we had just a series of small grants. But in 2004, we got a grant from USAID, a child survival grant for maternal and newborn care, to work with the Ministry of Health in approximately half of the districts of the country to improve their maternal and newborn care, and then a year later got a similar grant for child spacing. So here's what we had to work with. Pretty seriously bad maternal mortality, although these are pretty rough estimates as well. The infant mortality, neonatal under 5 mortality, was all quite high. Total fertility rate, they did a DHS in 2003, and it was basically the highest in the world. Almost 8 children per woman, and in fact, for the most recent study period, for like the 6 months before that, it was 8.2. So it was obviously a challenge, and that was actually what stimulated us to get our child survival, to get our child spacing grant, realization of how big the problem was. So the aims of our grant are basically to work with and through the Ministry of Health. We don't do things on our own. Our goal is to assist the Ministry of Health to strengthen their services. And both clinical services that in service in the health facilities, but also their community health activities. So to begin with, we realized that in order to really work closely with the ministry, it was absolutely essential to have an office space that was close or practically part of the ministry. We were able to get a grant from AID to rehabilitate one of these burned out buildings, and that had room for both the MCH unit of the ministry as well as us and some other people. Our early decision was that any strategy that we undertook had to be implemented with Ministry of Health staff. It wasn't going to be anything that we did on our own. And we also decided that we really needed to work not just at the central level and not just at the more peripheral level, but really at both levels. This is just a picture of the building that we rehabilitated to turn into an office. And this is, as I say, this is really what the whole town looked like. And it just, this is our opening. We have the Ministry of Health is in the white shirt there in the front and the ambassador to his left. So health strengthening, health services, health system strengthening was kind of our goal. We had realized very early on that although they had adopted this, you know, reasonable district health management team structure for the 13 districts in the country, there was no district program officer on this team in charge of MCH. There was a nutrition person and an environment person, and there was a statistics person, but there was no MCH person. And fortunately, the minister, who is quite a brilliant man, it was already clear to him that this was necessary. He had constraints on his hiring. But we were able to work out a deal where we supported the salaries of these people, and he said, oh, we'll do it for the country. And so within a few months of starting, there was an MCH district program officer for every district in the country, which we felt like was really an essential thing to do any of the kind of work we wanted to do. And a few other kind of obvious things we reinstated, worked with the head of the MCH unit to reinstate the MCH working group, and then they eventually made it also related to reproductive health. Because that group was going to be necessary, here we were. It was kind of an amazing opportunity. It was a new Ministry of Health. It was a new government. They were essentially trying to develop things that were teameries and not things that were, you know, like the old Indonesian system or like any other. We did support one of our day-to-day, I think most time-consuming and difficult activities, but probably most important was working with these DPOs, these MCH program officers, to go with them and go with the whole supervision process, because one of their major jobs was to supervise midwives that worked at the district level, and they really had no model of supportive supervision and, you know, the various things that a good supervision system needs. And so it took a lot of time, but we had some fantastic teameries, midwives on our staff who were able to really make that work. And then we developed the usual thing, training. Two major areas that had not been worked on were communication between midwives and their clients, and also there had been really nothing done with newborn care to that point. Well, we realized pretty early on that this whole process of strengthening care standards, strengthening performance, is really a slow process. It obviously takes a lot of time. The midwives had essentially very little experience of any kind of independent activity or any kind of responsibility that they were allowed to take on their own. And so there's really, it has been a very long process, but we feel definitely worth it, and certainly in our own experience see a lot of improvement and up to date. Community health promotion was also was something that the minister felt very strongly needed to be a function of the midwives in the health system, but really there had not been much done to that point. There's also not much known about the traditional beliefs. We had certainly a lot of individual anecdotes, but nothing, no real systematic look at what do women really believe about, what's a good birth for them, because the use of skilled birth attendants was very, very low. In fact, in our districts, it was only around 10-11%. So we decided we really needed to know more about what they thought was a good birth. It obviously was not going to a clinic. So we did some qualitative work around that, as well as around beliefs around child spacing, and use those results very much. They're both we use them in our programs, and we're certainly starting to see that other groups in the country that are working in maternal newborn care are using this information. So just three examples of what we've done in terms of community health promotion. These are all, remember, these are not things that we have done. When I say we, I mean us with the ministry. It was very clear that there needed to be some sort of stimulation of people's imaginations about what's possible, you know, what could be done in there to make their pregnancies and births and newborns safer. So we started out with the idea of a drama, and we had both a professional drama group and also some community drama groups that developed these, and we've done some evaluation on them, find that they did, in the short term at least, improve people's understanding of some basic ideas around maternal and newborn care. But the problem with that approach was that it was also tended to be pretty resource intensive. So we also went to the next step and said, well, you know, this was an interesting population that was essentially media naive, is the way I think of it. They basically had there are no televisions in most of these communities. And once in a while you come across a little town that has enough electricity that they can have TV, but they have not seen movies, television, video, nothing. So we decided to develop a film, and the film would have as one of its major purposes to acknowledge these many traditional practices, because they are many, and they're extremely well integrated within their society, but not kind of known, and certainly not integrated with the health system. And then also to point out from these practices some that were that could be changed, could be modified, and also just the standard maternal and newborn care messages that needed to get out. And we're also doing a separate film on child spacing. Then some of you at the session this morning, we also developed with an awareness that women, of some of the reasons that women didn't go to a health facility for a delivery. I mean, they had very good reasons. It was essentially the facilities provided exactly the opposite of what they wanted in a delivery. You know, a place with no hot water, they needed hot water. A place with no privacy, they needed privacy. A place where the family could be involved. The gamut of probably a lot of things that you're familiar with. So we developed what happened in this country when women said, I'm not going to a hospital to deliver. You know, we developed birthing centers, and so we've done two at this point and have funding for four additional pilot efforts to try to see if making a kind of a home-like atmosphere that's right next to a clinic, so there can be skilled birth attendants there, to see how well that promotes the use of skilled birth attendants. So the strengths we feel of this Ministry of Health-centered approach, I think, are kind of obvious. One thing that was important for us is that we had intervention, that our efforts were at national, district, and community levels. It was mixed, and I think that was important. It gave us an opportunity to influence Ministry of Health policy, so we sort of had access at the policy level, but we also had a lot of experience at the community level, so we kind of combined those together. And in fact, much more, in many cases, the people that work for the Ministry of Health at central level didn't have the funding and didn't have the time to get out and see what was going on in the communities. Provides capacity building. Scalability certainly is built into the program design. If it's not at least potentially scalable, we really don't take it on. And then the enhanced potential for sustainability as well, obviously, because it's the Ministry of Health carrying it on. I would be silly if I didn't say there were some challenges. We're of course very dependent on the Ministry of Health staff, because we do things with them. You know, we have this amazingly tiny Ministry of Health staff that does have to do. We have one person, Natalia, is in charge of the MCH unit, and she essentially has no assistance. She really has to deal with everything, and so it does definitely slow us down a bit. Also requires, because we're working with the ministry, requires a lot of coordination, not just with them, but with all the UN agencies and the other groups that are working with them. slower pace of activities. I think the monitoring system is a big problem. Timor, in 7 years, has had 7 international consultants to work on their monitoring system, their HMIS, and only now have they finally got somebody who's good. So we're hoping it will improve. Yeah, right. And in fact, flexibility, we're thinking flexibility is one of the real needs that we have in working in this kind of an approach. It's important that the donor and the ministry have, you know, consistent priorities. And we've been really lucky because the people in the AID mission there have been very, very, very understanding and helpful, as well as our funders, et cetera. And as I said, quite a strong minister of health. As the ministry develops, of course, they may have new priorities, and we're asked to take part in these new priorities. It wasn't in their work plan, but I think there are many times that we feel it's important to do it. For example, they are undertaking a health promoter, like a community health worker system now, and one of our staff is a master trainer for the community health workers, same thing with family planning. And there was recently a change of government. There was a change of government in this spring in East Timor, and that, of course, will bring new priorities, and we sort of are ready for that. So last slide, I think in terms of results so far, it is pretty clear that HAI is known as the main source of technical support for maternal and newborn care for the ministry. When they come out with a strategy document or whatever, we are the only NGO that's mentioned as a source of part of basically what they're planning to do. And the ministry has certainly adopted many of the initiatives that we work with them on to get started. Health promotion really is going on at the community level right now. But in terms of the longer-term outcomes, you know, is this really going to improve health? Is it even going to have a really strong, significant effect on health services? We don't know that yet, but I think we are hopeful that it will have. So our hope is that when these little girls get to be, you know, at an age where they themselves are having children and infants, that they will have a chance for a safer, more healthy pregnancy and delivery.